Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and it's another week where the United States government is on shutdown mode, but MAGA Michigan nutjob Congresswoman Lisa McClain from the Thumb Region is begging working class Americans and Michiganders to blame powerless brown immigrants for the shutdown and not her dear leader and his billionaire, untouchable corporate authoritarian oligarchy.
They are on the record wanting health care for illegals. Own it, Democrats. Say it loud. Say it proud. You want to put illegals over Americans. Just own it.
Ugh, imagine having to listen to that every day. Anyway, immigrants, you know, they come in all creeds, races, and religions, of course. But I don't think Lisa McClain is talking about immigrants from Norway. I mean, do you? And you see, this is how the MAGA Republican Party wants to separate all of us, because it'll benefit their corporate authoritarian campaign bribers. I mean, yeah, sorry, donors. Now, let's listen to a true representative of the working class in Michigan explain who's getting hurt by the Trump regime's healthcare shutdown. Here's progressive Democratic Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib in a social media video explaining how the MAGA Republican goal to implode the Affordable Care Act and Medicare and Medicaid is frightening so many of her Detroit constituents. Listen.
Republicans refuse to act to extend the tax credits for Affordable Care Act, to be able to address the fact that in the budget betrayal, they have abandoned and left so many of our families without health care coverage. So I want to read to you the real life impact. Again, it breaks my heart that my residents have to beg their own government to protect them, to take care of them. It's shameful. I understand that majority of my colleagues are millionaires, over 50% of them. They fully don't understand what it means to not have health care coverage or to live paycheck to paycheck. One said, quote, my father is on a fixed income and has been permanently disabled his whole life. These funding cuts have put him and our family at risk for losing health care coverage. On top of that, our living expenses have skyrocketed to the point that we have to pick and choose which bills to pay each month. We're always uncertain of whether we will have enough to pay for our food the next month as well. I'm 18 years old and I'm working too, but it's not enough to support my family and myself. Another one said, quote, my husband is retired and receiving his Medicare, but I'm not old enough, so I have to pay health care coverage from the marketplace. I had a heart attack a few years back. Currently, the cost of doctor visits are $40 to $80 a visit. My prescriptions are ridiculous. If our government doesn't grow up and work for the people, my husband and I are going to be in serious trouble. Another one, quote, increased health care costs will be devastating financially to my wife and I. I cannot afford to pay any increase in premiums. Messages after messages after messages. We got to stand strong. We got to make sure the Republicans do not abandon our families. They deserve for us to make sure we take care of them, especially when they get sick. It's not like they can stop getting sick. It's not like they can stop having cancer. We have to protect them.
But you understand that MAGA Republicans aren't about protecting the working class. It was never about protecting the working class. It's about placing more power into the top 1%, the corporate authoritarians, who are also asking white Christian nationalists to help them do it. And as I reported last week, the latest Kaiser Foundation or KFF poll found that 78% of Americans support the Washington, D.C. Democrats' fight to extend the ACA tax credits, or else millions of Americans will pay thousands of dollars more. I liked what Michigan Democratic Congresswoman Christine McDonald Rivett told Michigan Public Radio last month when she said that ending these tax credits would amount to a $730 increase per month for people in her Saginaw and Bay County district. I worked out there. There's a lot of hardworking Michiganders there. Now, I've had my disagreements with some of McDonnell Rivett's votes, especially on issues like immigration, but she's right on this issue, so I have to give her credit where credit is due. Same with progressive Michigan Democratic Senate candidate Abdullah Syed, who is not only putting out video after video on social media and appearing on all kinds of interviews talking about the need for Medicare for all in this country, but he's explaining how Dear Leader Trump and Michigan MAGA Republicans in Congress would rather shut down the government than ensure working class Michiganders get decent and affordable health care. Lisa McClain would rather shut down the government than help the working class and the Thumb region because, you see, she's got the best health care money can buy. Must be nice. And she's barely working for it right now, too, with the government being shut down. And speaking of Dr. Abdullah Syed, he understands how to make the idea or the concept of Medicare for All sound like both a human right cause, but also an economic right and also an economic benefit for all the working class, as he did in this video, explaining how it would help small businesses. Listen to this.
Medicare for All is a small business empowerment program, right? Investing in public schools is a small business empowerment program. But then beyond that, huge corporations play this game with state and local governments. They pit them against each other for whoever is willing to give them bigger and bigger tax breaks. And I would rather than giving huge corporations who don't need the tax break, I would rather give small businesses tax breaks.
Yeah, that's an example of a progressive Democrat explaining how Democrats simply can't always be fighting to protect or preserve certain programs. Democrats have been doing that for the last 45 years, and little by little, MAGA Republicans have chipped away at those working class programs, while establishment and corporate Democrats celebrate that, hey, while MAGA Republicans slashed 20% of a certain program, hey, we at least saved some of it from burning completely to the ground. Yeah, that doesn't work anymore. That's why Democrats, progressive Democrats, are gaining more and more popularity and more steam and more power these days, because as fascism and corporate authoritarianism continues to spread throughout the country, Democratic and independent voters are realizing that establishment Democrats fell short in saving the working class and fell short in saving democracy. They're realizing that corporate bribes to both Democrats and Republicans have forced themselves and their families to live paycheck to paycheck with very little savings for their children's futures or for their own retirements. I mean, it's not enough to argue that you will fight to save something. The people want to know that you'll reverse this corporate authoritarianism that's intruded our state and national governments. The people want to find leaders who will actually show up for them and not just for their corporate donors. I mean, in New York City, the mayoral race there is coming up here in a few weeks between progressive Democratic socialist Zoran Mamdani and corporate bribe taker, accused sex offender, and sudden lover of Dear Leader Trump and fascism, Andrew Cuomo. Mamdani stunned state Democratic Party insiders in New York with his resounding primary win. And now some of those politicians are reading the polls and realizing he is going to become the next mayor of New York City here in a few weeks. And while it may have taken them a while to read some of the tea leaves, they're beginning to change their tune a bit on Mamdani. Centrist establishment Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul of New York made an announcement this week that she spoke with Mamdani about universal health care or health care for all. And Hochul announced that she believes they can get it done. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a politician who understands the shifting that's happening with working class voters. Last week, I had the pleasure to speak with Jess Newman, who's part of the Invest in My Kids ballot initiative here in Michigan, which is asking voters to tax the top 1% in the state to provide much needed funding for our state's public schools, schools that suffered massive cuts some 20 years ago, and it's never recovered. And here was Jess Newman talking about why there's so much excitement with voters who are signing their petitions to put this issue on next year's state ballot. Because, you see, the working class understands how the current system filled with corporate corruption and government corruption is not working for them. like, you know, Michigan spending billions of dollars on corporate welfare through its now deceased SOAR program, which didn't really make our lives or our education system or the overall state a better place to live, as Jess Newman explained.
You know, the SOAR projects, the insistence that we have to be throwing tax breaks at these multi-million dollar corporations to build the communities that we see is just not borne out. And that simply by getting corporations and ultra wealthy people to pay what they owe, that we can build the communities that we need to thrive. I bought my home in Ferndale because it's a walkable community with great public schools and downtown thriving nightlife that I don't need to drive my car to get to, and great public goods and services. I chose this community because it provides the quality of life that as a young person I'm seeking here in Michigan. And so our assertion is there is no reason why every community across the state of Michigan cannot build a beautiful, thriving community with strong public schools and a strong public life that attracts these young families.
Yeah, you see, instead of throwing money at corporations and investing that money into our schools, into our communities, you know, perhaps that's a better way to attract jobs here to the state, maybe. I mean, it seems like a no-brainer to me and to you, I'm guessing. What I love about the Invest in My Kids ballot initiative is how it's not fighting to just allow public schools to tread water. It's about pushing to expand spending for public schools, to strengthen public schools. It's about pushing for more, pushing to strengthen the working class. Now, just look at the RX Kid program in Flint, which we covered last year here on the show. It's a mix of public and private funding that provides $1,500 to expecting mothers in Flint and some other communities, and $500 a month for the baby's first year of life. Last month, the Detroit Free Press released this story on whether the program is working for Flint moms. And let me just share a few paragraphs with you from this story, again, written by Nusret Rahman. And I quote, "In one paper published in the peer-reviewed American Journal of Public Health, researchers surveyed Flint moms eligible for RX Kids, those in Flint before the program began, and mothers in the surrounding region. There were two key outcomes for moms eligible for the program: improved financial security and improved mental health and well-being. Researchers, for instance, saw a massive drop in evictions in 2024 for new moms who had access to the cash aid program compared to those the year before," said Luke Schaefer, co-director of RX Kids and leader of the University of Michigan's Poverty Solutions Initiative, and also friend of this show. The story continues, "Among the findings in that report, evictions fell by about 91% among RX Kids eligible Flint moms in 2024 after childbirth compared to Flint women who had babies the year before, and postpartum depression declined too, from 46% down to 33%. Not only did RX Kids exposed mothers report a major decrease in postpartum depression with far-reaching implications for maternal and infant health, but they also felt more loved, respected, and hopeful, and expressed more trust in institutions," researchers wrote. And listen to this part, all right, everyone, listen to this part from that same story, and you'd think this would be something the so-called pro-life crowd would support. In another study, according to co-author Dr. Sumit Agarwal, a health economist and primary care doctor at the University of Michigan, prior to RX Kids, the proportion of infants born with low birth weight was rising in Flint, but after the program, that trajectory dipped down. In other words, over the study period, researchers estimated 42 fewer preterm births and 65 babies born at a normal birth weight. Wow. This is what happens when we invest in our people, invest in the working class, rather than just throwing money at corporations and the untouchable donor class. Now, I'll be rather critical of the recent state budget that was passed and signed into law by Governor Whitmer and a few, but there were a few good parts to that budget, no doubt. And one of the best parts is that there's more money now to expand the RX Kids program to other areas across the state. Again, RX Kids is already in Flint and 10 other communities across Michigan. But with this new $270 million investment in the state budget, the program will now expand to another dozen areas, helping 100,000 new babies and their moms in Michigan. You know, in the Eastern UP, for instance, that program's been there and it's already helped 370 rural families. And now with this new infusion of cash from the state budget, other northern communities will benefit as well. That's how you expand benefits for the working class. Protecting or saving older programs, no, it is not enough. This is how you move the needle. And this is how a political party shows that it is standing up for the working class. Again, progressive policies are popular. What, you think the Trump regime's helping the working class? Really? You think that? You think sending ICE agents around the United States to terrorize cities and people is both making us safer and creating a thriving working class? You really, really believe that? I mean, what happened to all of you MAGA types out there who proudly boasted that you would never allow the government to tread on you? Oh, yeah, that's right. I got it. You always wanted the government to tread on those you don't like. You see, though, there's no principle there because we're all in the working class. They don't see a difference. Just like there's no principle when you blindly back the Trump regime's insane tariff policies that are decimating farmers across Michigan and the country. That's the part of the country who really supported the regime. And now, dear leader Trump is hanging them out to dry as soybean farmers have nowhere to sell their products since China was one of the United States' chief soybean importers. And then China went out and made a deal with Argentina to purchase the South American country's soybeans. And that, of course, this is being done as the Trump regime right now is shelling out $40 billion in bailout money to the MAGA leader in Argentina. $40 billion. I mean, that country is in an economic tailspin thanks to the pro-corporate laissez-faire economic policies pushed by that right-wing president named Javier Milei. But it's not just that Milei is a MAGA leader, but it's also being done because financial firms such as BlackRock, Fidelity, and PIMCO stand to do very, very well there since, you know, they're heavily invested there. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent is friends with so many inside those corporations. Again, you see, it's about helping the connected. It's about helping the untouchables. It's about helping out the elites. It's about the corporate corruption. It's about the governmental greed. Meanwhile, the Trump regime is closing down rural hospitals and withholding billions of dollars to help working class Americans afford health care. Even more, he's screwing over America's farmers. I thought this whole MAGA movement was America first. Michigan Farmers Union president and good friend of this podcast, Bob Thompson, said in a statement this week, Donald Trump promised that he was going to lower grocery bills, but Michiganders see through the charade. Farmers are losing out on crucial funds from the United States Department of Agriculture at the very height of the harvest season because Republicans in Congress can't seem to get their act together and fund the government. The trade wars that Trump started are now driving down commodity prices for crops like corn, wheat, and soybeans. Because other countries are taking their businesses elsewhere. If Congress and the White House don't get their act together soon and provide farmers with economic relief, we're going to see even more family farms die off. That was Michigan Farmers Union President Bob Thompson. And he's right. It's not about working for the working class. It's about working for the corporate class. Now, if there's one way for Michigan Democrats to, you know, sort of muddy the waters a bit when it comes to representing the working class, since the Trump regime isn't doing it, well, Democrats have done it in Michigan because they decided to pass this new marijuana tax to help fund roads. Now, I shouldn't blame all Democrats in the state legislature because some did vote against that new 24% wholesale tax on recreational marijuana purchases that supporters say will raise $420 million every year for roads. Yes, I know, I'm sure. That 420 number just happened. Now, some Democrats and some Republicans voted against the bill, and that's good because, well, that was bipartisan, and we don't get a whole lot of that nowadays. And the tax did pass the Democratic-controlled state Senate by just one vote. Here's another part which just doesn't make sense to me as to why some Democrats would back this bill. Michigan is desperately trying to create jobs and also trying to diversify its economic portfolio. And ever since we, the voters, passed that marijuana proposal back in 2018, over 46,000 jobs have been created within the cannabis industry. 46,000 jobs. Again, there were some good parts to this whole budget, but this 24% wholesale tax on marijuana isn't just another gut punch for the working class in a number of ways, but it might be against the state's constitution, since the marijuana legalization law that we passed already had a set 10% tax locked in. Can the legislature and Governor Whitmer simply add another tax to something that we, the voters, didn't agree to when we passed the law in the first place? Joining me to talk more about this here in just a moment is Karen O'Keefe from the Marijuana Policy Project. So stay here. You're listening to LOL.
A podcast that believes in using common sense to move Michigan into the future. And by common sense, we mean progressive sense. We've all seen what 40 years of Republican leadership did to this state, and we refuse to go back. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. You can follow Pat on Facebook or X. Pat still calls it Twitter. Or on the Gram, Threads, and also on YouTube. Subscribe to the show on YouTube and wherever else you listen to your podcasts. All right, I think we gave Pat enough time to catch his breath. Let's get back to it. Here's Pat Johnston.
Leftoflansing@gmail.com is the best way to reach me, but you can also DM me on Blue Sky, Facebook, and also on Twitter. All right. Well, you've heard the news about Governor Gretchen Whitmer signing the new Michigan budget for this fiscal year and how she and Democrats and Republicans agreed to pass a 24% wholesale tax on recreational marijuana. And it's projected to provide, yes, $420 million in funding per year. Yes, many have joked and snickered over how that ended up being a projected number. Cool, I know. But as usual, out of Lansing, in order to pay for roads and services, the state legislature and governor agreed that it should rest on the working class and also on small businesses to carry the weight in raising that money. A hefty portion of the money for roads will go towards much needed public roads. But at the same time, we need more money for public transit purposes so that we aren't putting as much stress on the roads and as much stress on the people. But I digress. This new wholesale tax on marijuana is being challenged by the Michigan Cannabis Industry Association, and it filed a lawsuit with the Michigan Court of Claims arguing that the tax is unconstitutional in that it violates the 2018 marijuana legalization law that we, the voters, approved. I wanted more of an expert on this subject to help explain the situation in more detail than I could provide. So I'd like to welcome Karen O'Keefe to the show here this week. Ms. O'Keefe is the Director of State Policies from the Marijuana Policy Project. Karen, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out of your busy schedule to talk with us here this week on Left of Lansing.
Glad to be here with you.
Well, right before the final budget passed, both the state Republican majority in the House and the Democratic-controlled state Senate, you wrote a piece in Bridge, Michigan titled, "Cannabis Consumers Shouldn't Bear the Burden of Fixing Michigan's Roads." And in the article, Karen, you wrote that this tax threatens to undermine the success of the voter-approved marijuana law by singling out cannabis consumers to foot the bill for projects like road repairs. Can you explain for the listeners out there how this new wholesale tax could undermine the success the law has experienced since it passed back in 2018?
Sure. So the 24% wholesale tax is in addition to an existing total of 16% at retail. And up to this point, Michigan, by many measures, has had one of the most successful, if not the most successful, legalization law in terms of replacing the illicit market where people are at risk of being arrested and prosecuted and consumers can have illegal products with pesticides and other hazards, with a legal regulated market where people have a job that has unemployment insurance and workers' comp and all of the other things that you take for granted in a legal job, plus not having to worry about arrest. So the state of Michigan has the highest amount of volume of cannabis sales of any state, and it has the highest amount of per capita sales. And part of the reason for that is because its taxes up until this point have been pretty moderate at 16%. It's pretty middle of the road. If you increase that tax, so it's a total of 24% at wholesale plus 16% at retail, I expect we'll see a lot less demand. We'll also see a lot of changes in how the market itself works. So right now, Michigan has pretty low cannabis prices, and the way it works is a lot of growers will sell their cannabis to retailers and not get paid until the retailers sell them to consumers. You cannot get a business loan for a cannabis business. Banks don't make loans. The Small Business Association doesn't make loans because it's federally illegal. So a lot of people have put their life savings, their retirement accounts, into their cannabis business that operates on very small margins. These retailers don't have money sitting around in most cases to pay for the cannabis they're buying and a wholesale tax upfront. So a lot of them will likely be squeezed and will not be able to pay for the product. So you might see very empty shelves if this goes into effect, and retailers closing down if they're not able to buy the product. There was also a big report that was done in 2024 that looked at how people are getting their cannabis now in Michigan. And it found that 35% at that time either got it from an adult use retailer or delivery. But at the time, you still had 15% getting it from a dealer, 8% from home grow and other sources. So there's a lot of fluidity for where people buy their cannabis. And the more expensive legal regulated cannabis is, the more likely people will go back to illicit cannabis, will start growing their own, and then you'll see fewer jobs, fewer small businesses, and more businesses failing.
Which is exactly why one of the main arguments for passing the 2018 amendment was to tamp down on the illegal market, right? And to make this regulated so that thereby people were getting a safer product.
Exactly. The whole opening purposes section of the initiative was about displacing the illicit market and moving it into a safe, regulated, lab-tested market. And of course, an illegal market, when you're buying cannabis illegally, sometimes, you know, people pull guns on each other. You sometimes have cannabis that has heavy metals in it. There are all kinds of hazards if you push this industry back underground for the workers, for the consumers, and for everyone involved. And so this really risks pushing a lot of the market back to this less regulated, unregulated, and less safe space. We also have an issue where Michigan sells a lot of cannabis to people from other states, including other legalization states that have more expensive cannabis right now. So in Ohio, they right now have the same tax rate as Michigan, roughly, our pre-24% wholesale tax rate. And in Illinois, the cannabis tax rate is higher than Michigan's had been. So people are driving many hours to buy cheaper cannabis, which involves the cost of driving. They also may spend money here in Michigan on hotels and going out to eat. And if the cannabis is taxed at a much higher rate, fewer people will want to invest that time to go buy cheaper cannabis, especially if it is not cheaper at all. So I don't think we'll see anywhere, if it's implemented, that we'll see anywhere near the amount of revenue they project, because the amount of people buying cannabis will decrease as prices go up.
That's a great point. And it's something I thought about, too, because Michigan's marijuana business, I would have to think, like you just mentioned, does attract, not only attracts those out-of-staters to travel in and visit our marijuana shops, but I mean, like you just said, I would surmise that some of those out-of-staters also visit other local businesses, like, you know, say a restaurant or any other kind of store that helps the local and state economies as well. I mean, it just, I don't know if there are hard numbers to show that, but I don't know. It's kind of common sense to think that that is happening, right?
Yeah, there's been a lot of reporting on, they call New Buffalo, New Puffalo now, because the amount of people that come from both Indiana and Illinois and other border towns, there's been a lot of reporting about the volume of traffic that's come in. We don't keep hard data in Michigan on how many people are buying cannabis from out of state, but in Illinois, where the tax rate is vastly higher than Michigan's was, they actually separate out the data. And for 2004, 22% of their purchases were from out of state people. And that's a state where their cannabis is so expensive. Expensive that many people come to Michigan from Illinois to buy cheaper cannabis. So it's definitely higher than that here.
So just to be clear, though, this new 24% wholesale tax on recreational marijuana, this is going to be in addition to the current, what was it, 16% tax right now?
That's right. Yeah. So it's a staggering tax burden that is dissimilar from any other product in the state. So right now, the 16% tax is 6% standard sales tax and then 10% excise tax, and this adds 24% at wholesale. In comparison, beer is taxed at what amounts to about 2 cents per can, which is less than 1%, about 1% of the sales price. The tax on wine depends on the potency of it, but it's about 20 cents a liter. Again, about 2 cents a cup, which is, you know, less than 1% if you're buying glass wine out. So we already have an excise tax, and they also are subjected to sales tax. So already before this 24% tax, cannabis was taxed at around 10 times the rate of beer and wine. And it's obscene to me to have something that for so many people is over-the-counter medicine. A lot of people have shifted from the medical program. 74%, 75% of the people that were on the medical cannabis program are now using it as over-the-counter medicine. And surveys show that about 48% of adult use consumers use cannabis at least partly for pain. So to have this massive sin tax on something that for so many people is making it possible for them to not be in excruciating pain, not use opioids, is really offensive.
And it simply just doesn't make a lot of sense to do this, what you just mentioned, because As inflation continues to cause basic needs and necessities to rise in prices, pharmaceutical drugs keep skyrocketing too. And as we know, many working class Michiganders are choosing to use cannabis over prescription meds, but now they will end up having to pay a heavier price.
Yeah, they can technically go back to registering as a medical cannabis patient if they want to. Okay. But that costs money too. You need sometimes up to $100 for the doctor certification, plus $40 to register, and you're on a government list for being a cannabis consumer. And a lot of the products that patients use simply aren't available in the medical realm, because to sell both medical and adult use cannabis, you need two separate licenses. I'm told it's about $20,000 for the medical license. So a lot of businesses are currently just selling in the adult use market. So you could potentially have, you know, more people going to get medical cannabis, which again would just mean less tax revenue for the state. And right now, those people are choosing to be unregistered patients and to buy it as over-the-counter medicine.
Right. Again, I think this is maybe just guesswork at this point, but you have these Michigan lawmakers and the governor saying, well, this will raise $420 million annually for roads. But how can that be really true if we know that this will not only shut down recreational marijuana shops, but also this will encourage people to buy illegally and discourage those from out of state to come in here? You would have to think that the numbers, there's no way we would get to that $420 million.
I don't see there being any likelihood at all of it getting anywhere close to $420 million.
Yeah.
And if you look at the amount of revenue that cannabis has brought in, it is a vast amount. In 2024 alone, cannabis taxes brought in over $520 million between the excise tax and the sales tax. In comparison, the excise tax combined for beer, liquor, and wine brought in $128 million. So just the excise tax was over $300 million. So you're bringing in already twice as much excise tax revenue from cannabis as from alcohol, even though way more people are using alcohol regularly. So we already have this vastly disparate burden that cannabis consumers are facing, and this just amplifies it.
I don't know if you've really been able to delve into it more, but if you have, can you tell us a little bit more about this Michigan Cannabis Industry Association lawsuit that it filed with the Michigan Court of Claims, in which it argued that this new tax is illegal, is unconstitutional, since it is changing the excise tax rate that we, the voters, agreed on in 2018. Can you talk more about that?
Exactly. So under Michigan law, if voters approve a statutory initiative, lawmakers can only amend that initiative with a three-quarter supermajority, and I believe it has to actually amend the law itself that was enacted instead of having a separate bill. This new tax did not get a three-quarter supermajority. It Yep. passed by 19-17 in the state Senate. So the argument is that this was an unlawful amendment to the voter initiative. That's one of the arguments. Another argument is related to a very misleading title that the bill initially started with that did not mention cannabis at all. And what happened is advocates had no idea that this was going to be voted on in the House. They gutted and replaced language within a couple of hours from a totally different title of a bill and a completely different bill, and then voted on it with no committee hearing and no opportunity for the public to weigh in beforehand. So one of the arguments is related to the changing of the purpose of the bill by gutting and replacing it and not having an accurate title at first because it talked about taxes when those weren't included. And then there's other parts of the language too that the argument is that it would impair the right to contract, because right now, the way businesses run, a lot of times you have volume discounts and other discounts from growers to purchasers. And in addition to levying this tax, it says the tax is levied on a wholesale price that does not include any discounts. So it either forbids those discounts for volume and other things, or it taxes it without it. So there's three different arguments that are being made in the complaint.
You feel pretty good about where it's going in the courts? Do you think that your side has a good argument here?
I think they have a very strong argument. Gretchen Whitmer, the governor's staff, she pushed for an even higher tax. They argue that they did not need a supermajority because the language of the initiative says that there's a 10% excise tax in addition to other taxes. MCIA is arguing that in addition to other taxes means non-excise taxes. It's standard sales tax, things like that, the corporate income tax, and that the only excise tax that's allowed is what was authorized in the initiative of 10%.
Karen, I know you've got to get going, but if you don't mind me asking here for last question, why did marijuana legalization become such a main issue for you? And do you foresee a time where a federal recreational law will pass in our lifetime?
Yeah. So when I was a student attorney in New Orleans, I did some criminal defense and I just saw staggering racial inequality in the enforcement of laws and some cases that really shocked the conscience with the severity of sentences for cannabis. So I got involved in the issue because I don't think anybody should be locked in a cage or deprived of their freedom for using a plant that is safer than alcohol. I do think at some point federal legalization will happen, and it's kind of shocking that nothing has moved this far. We have 40 states that have some kind of medical cannabis law, and all of that remains federally illegal. So I can't predict when it will happen. The leaders of both the House and the Senate are not currently supportive of legalization. But in time, if we keep fighting, I'm optimistic that we will finally see federal legalization.
Yeah, I agree with you. If people would like to learn more about your work and others there with the Marijuana Policy Project, how would they do so?
They can go to MPP or marijuanapolicy.org and sign up for our email alerts, follow us on social media. We let people know when things are hopping, both federally and at the state level, and plug in and get involved.
All right. Thanks so much for educating us on this topic here and for explaining how this Michigan tax threatens working class consumers and so many small businesses in the cannabis industry in Michigan, but also how marijuana legalization is both an economic and, as you just said, like a social justice fight here. So Karen O'Keefe, Director of State Policies for the Marijuana Policy Project, thanks so much for being on this week and good luck with all the work that you're doing on a daily basis.
My pleasure. Thank you.
This isn't a conservative podcast. We actually believe in freedom here. And we don't lose sleep over solar panels either. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Don't forget, we're on YouTube now. Subscribe to us on YouTube or wherever else you get your podcasts. Tell Pat what you think of the show by contacting him at leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, let's get back to the show with Pat Johnston.
Thanks again to Karen O'Keefe from the Marijuana Policy Project for joining us here this week. You know, Republican State Senator Ed McBroom in the UP proudly voted to support that 24% tax on marijuana, saying that not only had the marijuana legalization law allowed the legislature to add even more taxes to it, but McBroom said marijuana fell short of the projected revenue. Now, of course, it brought over $500 million last year, Ed. But please, please, tell your UP constituents who are currently getting screwed by your dear leader's tariffs and program cuts that they'll have to now pay even more for their pot. And you are trying to argue that prices are being lowered nowadays? Yeah, I'm certain, Ed, that will go over so well up there in the UP. Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. Politico released a story showing a bunch of young MAGA Republican leaders across the nation saying racist, sexist, anti-Semitic, misogynistic, anti-LGBTQ things in a chat forum. Wow, what a surprise, right? Now, in the chat, some of these young Republican leaders, some of whom have connections with congressional Republicans, by the way, yeah, some of these people used racial slurs, announced their support for gas chambers, and even advocated for rape and slavery. Again, what a surprise, right? Considering dear leader himself is an adjudicated sex harasser. Now, Michigan Advance's Catherine Daly, in her write-up of the political story, described a conversation between two of these young Republican leaders who expressed hope in finding the most right-wing MAGA candidate in Michigan Senate primary. And I'll quote the story. Specifically, Politico reported that Alex Dwyer, the chair of the Kansas Young Republicans, told the chat that he had been told by the vice chair of Michigan's chapter that, quote, "my delegates and I will vote for the most right-wing person." Peter Guenta, the chair of the New York State Young Republicans at the time, responded to the message by saying, "Great, I love Hitler." Again, are you surprised? Now, Krish Manthani, who is the youth chair of the Michigan Republican Party, released a statement saying that these statements are grotesque and must be denounced. But then you had Michonne Maddock, the former co-chair of the Michigan Republican Party and wife, of course, of the crazy state representative Matt Maddock in Milford. You had Michonne Maddock mocking the whole story, saying on Twitter that she was bored by it. And I'm sure she is. Why would any of those things really be a surprise to her? I'm sure she has heard those kinds of statements each and every day amongst her crowd. Because how many times do the hoods have to come off these people? They don't represent the working class. They only believe in white Christian nationalism. That's their motivation. And they're being used by the corporate authoritarian elites to help them gain power. And that's why these No King rallies happening across the state and the nation this Saturday are important. They will make MAGA Republicans realize that they are in the minority as people are tired of their hatred and also tired of their disdain for the working class. So try to make it to a No Kings rally if you can this Saturday. The Trump regime is, of course, trying to do damage control by saying it's all sponsored by Antifa, which, of course, isn't a group, but who cares? It forces the MAGA cult to acknowledge that their brand of white Christian nationalism isn't wanted here, and neither is the fascism that the regime is leveling on the American people.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Special thanks again to Karen O'Keefe for providing her expertise on Michigan's new wholesale tax on marijuana and how it's already being fought in the courts. Hey, visit nokings.org to find a No Kings rally in your area. Trust me, they are happening everywhere across the state. You shouldn't really have a difficult time finding a place to go. And finally, yes, it was a sad ending to Detroit Tigers baseball last weekend, especially considering how well they were playing during the first half of the year. But as we saw in that Game 5, a loss to the Seattle Mariners, the Tigers just could not get any clutch hitting. Let's hope that they are able to find some bats next year, because I believe they are just maybe a bat or two and maybe a pitcher or two away from really, really contending for the World Series. But for now, we have to wait till next year. Until next time, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.